1 o'clock hour, Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you here on 96.5 The Fan. It's that time of the week where we welcome in our friend and our Chiefs analyst and insider, Nate Taylor from The Athletic. What's going on, Nate? Good to have you back in studio, man. Fresh off a little trip to the ATL.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about good eating.
How was T.I.?
Oh, T.I. was fun. He toned it down for the audience, which I
kinda have to,
which I appreciated. He did. He came out. You saw his entire face, which I thought was hilarious. And then he brought a little kid on stage to. I don't know if that was. That's not his daughter, is it?
I don't know.
But he brought out the little girl who did the chorus for "Live Your Life." I mean, just excellent. There were a decent amount of people in the stands, but it wasn't a true sellout. I don't think it was a sellout crowd. No, there were still even in the second quarter.
Their biggest game they said in the building's history, they didn't sell it out.
You can't have the biggest game.
There's just way too many teams doing loser stuff this year. That's loser stuff.
You cannot have your biggest game in our new stadium, which is not really new, in week three, guys. It can't. There was a game I think a couple years ago where they played the Panthers, and that game was essentially a playoff game late in the season, and I think DJ Moore went off, and I can't remember if they won that game or not. Youngway Koo was probably involved in the last minute, but I'm like, wasn't that game for the actual division or play?
Sounds right, something like that.
In the playoff hunt. So I'm like, that can't be your most important game of the stadium's history. While Arthur Blank is like, why don't I
induct myself?
Put myself in the ring of honor.
I would watch a 30 for 30 on who suggested it first or what that conversation was like. I mean, that'd be the same as if, like, look, we got this blank wall because we changed stations.
Right.
If Speck's new suggestion for this wall was, I'd like to start a 96.5 The Fan /610 Hall of Fame, and I'd like to nominate myself, Stephen Spector, to be the first person to go up on the wall. And you'd be like, I mean, we could have gone with Kling or something. I don't know why you had to talk to her. There's a couple of guys who used to work here who are on, national television, but okay.
Yeah,
I guess Speck it is.
Why did it take so long for Arthur Blank to get in, though? That's what's real. What took so long, Arthur?
The best part is, everybody in the boardroom was like, Yeah, sure.
Yeah, who's going to be the person? You know what? I'm not sure, actually, if this is the year for you.
But then somebody in the back was like, we're going to do Matt Ryan, right? Matt Ryan, too, at some point. Okay, cool. It won't just be you, Arthur. At some point, we'll add the actual guy that helped us get to the Super Bowl. T.I. was fun. T.I. was a lot of fun. It reminded me of the AFC Championship game when they brought out T-Pain at halftime or whatever. And I was just like, I mean, tough gig, T-Pain. Because if you remember, the Ravens were down 17-7 to the Chiefs with the Super Bowl on the line. And my man was like, everybody on your feet. And everybody was like,
not right now, T-Pain.
I don't know, man. We don't look good out here.
How does that, by the way, how does that stadium compare to, you've been to SoFi, you've been to Allegiant?
It's really nice. Oh, it's really nice. Now what I was told was, I mean, it was pretty loud in there. So I will give Falcon fans credit. A lot of Chiefs fans obviously made the trip. So it was a very good atmosphere for a regular season game in September. But what I was told and what I wish I can see or could see at some point is when they get Georgia in that building.
Really?
It'll be fun.
Plus the roof was open, right? The little ocular thing or whatever they want to call it.
Which, Clark Hunt, take notes. It's pretty. It's really nice.
You know what's weird? I'm watching games, though, so that's a cool design, but the one that I think looks the best when just because of the lighting is Minneapolis.
Yeah.
That's what I would like to mimic. Sure. Because in an afternoon game, it's bright in there, and it looks outdoors, and it's perfect. Great.
Yeah. And it's a little bit bigger than the open space that is available in Atlanta. So to your point, I totally agree. Whether you do that, whether it's more like of a traditional retractable roof, which is more Indianapolis, Houston, fine. But it's really pretty, and I was just told by several people that, hey, as long as Georgia's this good and they're going to be playing in that whatever Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl nonsense, they're going to destroy people in that stadium. So that's what I heard was the best part, but it's really nice. It's easy to get in and out of, too, which is something I've started to think about more and more as I travel to NFL games in the anticipation of the Chiefs trying to figure out their own decision, how they're going to do with whatever the new building is, whether it's in Missouri or Kansas, because again, I'm of the belief that Arrowhead's time is ticking. I don't think it's going to last beyond 2030, which is when the lease ends with the Truman Sports Complex. So it's easy to get in and out of. I don't feel like it was cluttered at all. I talking to some people who were on the flight back that I had yesterday, had a good experience. So again, you know, Clark Hunt, take notes.
Nate,
Mark Donovan, who was in the press box for Sunday's game. Yeah. Hey, man, you see that up there?
It looks cool.
And, like, the scoreboard is like...
Yeah, the whole wraparound.
Yeah, the wraparound. I was like, hey, man, this looks nice. And by the way, unlike Arrowhead, which I don't know why they don't do this. I know some fans have come to me and asked, and I just don't have the answer. The Falcons will replay any play for you, even though it's not in their favor. It's like, oh, wait, man, did you see that Patrick Mahomes throw? And it's like, wow, it's really in, like, 4K up there, and it's bright and big and, like, really cool. So, like, even if you miss something, you can always see it basically before the next play starts. So I think Atlanta, from a production value, did a really nice job. And they got to have T-Pain in the building,
which is obviously cool. When you look at what, like, from the team on the field perspective.
Excuse me, not T-Pain. Dang it.
Well, we were talking about T-Pain earlier. When we're talking about the team on the field, I think we can get to, like, tackle and running back and all that. But we were having the conversation. Patrick Mahomes is bottom five in the league in attempts over 20 yards, bottom five in the league in completions over 20 yards. I don't know how much time we spent this offseason saying the high-flying offense, it's coming back.
Yep.
Is he not used to throwing it deep anymore? Is he out of rhythm? Is Nagy making it more concerned? Is Andy, like, what is the single biggest reason why this team, once again, does not have a deep passing game?
You want me to give my honest opinion?
Yeah.
Always, Nate. Always.
Okay, kids. Every now and then I have the idea of, you know, reminding people of what happened in the past and why things are not going well now. And it mostly is upon 15's responsibility. So look, there are some routes where they are having people run past the sticks, 18 to 20 yards, hell, even 25 yards. Patrick either doesn't see it, or as we saw Sunday night against the Falcons, he's too sped up to process things correctly. And then my biggest, not necessarily criticism, but my biggest want moving forward is, if you know your offensive line is not as good as you were led to believe, and you know you don't have Isaiah Pacheco anymore for at least the next 7 games, and you know you don't have Hollywood Brown for most of the season, hell, if everything goes perfectly, he might come back in mid-December, as I told you guys. Hey, man, it's this thing called your legs and this thing called creation mode, and it's getting out of the pocket and doing the things that helped you be successful earlier in your career. So it is noticeable to me that the one time he did choose to scramble, choose to pump fake, choose to get the defense to sort of react to him, Justin Watson is wide
open. That was a great play.
On the corner.
3 pump fakes.
For, what, an 18-yard gain or whatever? I can look it up here in a minute.
Yeah.
That's the only play he did that. Now, there's a couple times where I think correctly he noticed that there was man coverage so he could scramble out of the pocket for a first down or move up the field. I think he's being too reliant on staying in the pocket, or I'm so sped up because I'm not totally sure I'm going to be protected because, like, Carson Steele's a rookie and he's never done this before.
Or like a whole year of maybe like dinking and dunking and you just kind of stop thinking about the deep pass.
Well, or your timing's just off. I think he's so sped. It's so weird. Like the first play of the game, Rashee Rice is wide open. It's a design, schematic, brilliant play call from Andy Reid, Matt Nagy. As Patrick says, like his footwork is terrible on the pass. And so he one-hops it basically to Rashee Rice, where that should be a 30-yard gain if completed, if accurately on time. So you're like, okay, well, he sped it up. He didn't go through his normal rhythm coming out of the play action. Okay, fine. Later on in the drive, even though they've moved the ball as efficiently as you would want with the too high shell coverage look, man, here we go. Another design play where Xavier Worthy is wide open and he waits. He takes longer than he should.
Although Andy said that was protection ball. And the protection wasn't good there. I don't think that's the full excuse, but the protection did fail a little.
A little, but the ball should be, I think if Patrick looks at it, he'll probably realize that the ball should be out sooner.
Should have been out already.
Or the throw should be a lot further to his right, which lets Worthy run under it versus throwing it more towards the actual post, which is probably where the play is actually designed. But it lets Mike Hughes back into the play. And instead of a touchdown, Xavier Worthy does a really good job, honestly, of just being the defensive back at that point, knowing that Mike Hughes undercuts the route because the ball is late and not accurately thrown. So why is Travis Kelce not open? Well, guys, one way to get the defense to stop having two guys next to Travis Kelce is to get out of the pocket. So in some ways, I would recognize and advise the coaching staff to say, hey, more play action, some rollouts, some moving of the pocket to get him not to be necessarily stagnant. But also, hey, man, when the first read and second read ain't there, like, you're healthy. You got the legs. Make it happen. Like, let's get to, like, creation mode, because we just saw that last night with Jaden Daniels. Like, Jaden Daniels doesn't like it? Okay, well, we about to move out and figure out a way. And I just think Patrick, at least as of right now, his rhythm's off, and he is probably too reliant on the check down because he sees the way the coverage plays out, which 9 times out of 10, that's fine. But you also need to challenge the defense more than he has done over the last 2 weeks.
Todd McShay was on with Ryan Russillo earlier today. He was talking about Travis Kelce. I bring that up because you just mentioned Kelsey's name a little bit. We know through 3 weeks, the production has not been there. I think we acknowledged last week that, you know, if one's not called back for a penalty, the stat line looks a little bit different.
Yep.
But this was another game. They highlighted it throughout the broadcast. Other than the first few snaps of the second half, there wasn't much of a concerted effort to give him the ball. So what's going on? Well, listen to Todd McShay's reasoning.
Are we not allowed to say that he's out of shape, that he's been partying all offseason? He's been jet-setting around with the most famous person probably in the entire world. The coverage and the respect he gets is the same. The athlete is not. Now, is he going to work himself into shape during the season? Yeah, I'm sure he will. He's an unbelievable competitor. He's one of the best to ever do it. But he's not the same guy right now. I'm not blaming it on Taylor Swift. I'm not blaming anything. All I'm saying is when you win 2 Super Bowls, you've got the whole tour that happens after the Super Bowl. There's no one else doing more commercials, I don't think, in the league. I mean, he and Mahomes are up there, but I think Kelsey's doing more commercials and things. He's been at more events, doing more things socially. It's impossible to carry that schedule and still put in the same amount of time for football.
So that was Todd McShay, by the way.
It's a terrible
former ESPNer. He's not actually with ESPN anymore. I said the commercial stuff always is ridiculous to me because they film it months ago, and I don't believe that's really changing much of his offseason. I think the traveling, I think if you and I were traveling as much as he did, it'd be a bigger problem because we're flying coach or,
right, you know, we're flying commercial.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm dragging my luggage through the airport, my flight's delayed, I'm tired and all that. He can sleep just fine on a private jet. Some of it has to be that he's getting older. I think that's fair.
Sure. But he's not out of shape.
He was at training camp on time, every practice.
On New Heights, he said he took a trainer with him to Germany.
Everywhere.
He took people with him on the road to train.
Todd McShay, stick to the 2027 mock drafts.
Yeah, I just want to reference this because this was in my article about his actual summer, which is interestingly enough.
Oh, that's right. You wrote a whole story about it.
I wrote an entire story on it.
Nate, is Todd McShay correct?
No.
Did he give up on football?
No. this is what I wrote. This is just 2 sentences. A byproduct of Kelce's cram itinerary was changing his usual training routine. Wherever Kelce was, one of his 3 personal trainers, Alex Speckle, Andrew Sperling, and Justin Nee, was usually with him. Guys, he was training the entire offseason. And look, to your point, Alex, he participated in every practice during training camp, and he's been healthy. He's been accountable. He's been on the field more than actually I would advise at this point, this early in the season. Like, entering Sunday's game, he was on the field 91% of the Chiefs' overall offensive snaps through 2 games. So they have not actually executed their plan, which is what Andy Reid told us. It was like, no, actually, we need to, like, you know, scale him back. Now, part of that is no Hollywood Brown, and now that we don't have Pacheco, sorry, bud, you got to be on the field, man. And they have used him as a decoy, which is fine, and it worked.
It's worked a bunch.
It's worked effectively well against the Ravens, less so against the Bengals. And then, look, as my buddy Nate Tice has put on Twitter, and you can go check out his film work, they actually switched positions against the Falcons, which was really, really interesting. Hey, Rashee Rice, you're actually going to be running more Travis Kelce routes, and now Travis Kelce is going to be running a little bit more further downfield to open up more space against the Falcons' zone coverage.
And it worked.
So, yeah, how much is it? The Falcons run more zone than like anybody. Yes. How much is this just that Rice, very quickly, he's now mastered kind of what Travis has done, find the open spot, soft spot in the zone or whatever, and, and he's the most effective at that right now.
And, guys, they are criminally getting away with this at 3-0. I mean,
yeah, they're not playing great football.
They're not playing great football. But every time I look at the stats, I'm like, well, the offense was like pretty good. Now, I think the bigger criticism, the bigger concern is like their ineffectiveness in the red zone.
Sure.
Which I will probably write about at some point this week before they face a brittle Chargers team, unfortunately, based on their injuries. But yeah, you look at any NFL stat.
You could have said that any year, by the way.
I know. But,
evergreen.
But Jim Harbaugh had them boys playing, and then they all got hurt on Sunday. It wasn't.
The whole damn team. Honestly,
it wasn't pretty.
Yeah, Herbert's his fault, though. Other guys' injuries happen. He didn't have to put Herbert out there. He had back-to-back divisional games, including the Chiefs and the Broncos and one on the road.
Yep.
He didn't have to put him out there against the Steelers.
Not great.
That's on him.
So, look, obviously the most prolific team in the league right now is the Buffalo Bills. They're averaging 37 points a game. That's nuts. Again, it's only 3 weeks, but the Chiefs are a top 10 offense right now.
Yep.
By most metrics.
Top two in the AFC.
Yep.
Points per game.
And points per game. So they're averaging 25 points a game. Now one of those is a, you know, scoop and score by the defense. So you take that, obviously. But they're still an above-average offense without Travis Kelce really needing to be relied upon. And then guess what, guys? They went into the locker room and they said, we could throw the ball to him a couple times. He could run it. You know what? He can run a legitimate route, you know, one that, like, tests the actual defensive back. Oh, look at that. He's wide open in man coverage. Wow, that's cool. So they need to use Kelce, I think, more in the red zone, which they have chosen not to do for obvious reasons, because why would we show that now when we can show that a lot later? And I think all these funky formations and having Leo Chenault line up as a fullback, I mean, I can't really curse, but it's just blank and giggles.
Yeah, I mean, Mahomes is motioning out to wide receiver. We were saying, like, you think any team really is paying attention to that? They won't even use a QB sneak. You think they're going to throw him the football in the red zone and leave him vulnerable?
Guys, it's blank and giggles, okay? They're having fun in September in a red zone game against a essentially meaningless Falcons team and getting away with it. Like, it's crazy to me. But at some point, the reason that makes Travis Kelce so great is Mahomes' elusiveness, his legs, his creativity. Get out of the pocket, man. And his best play of the season that has actually been recorded in the box score is when the Ravens actually pressured him. Patrick scrambles. And, oh, guess what? There's Travis Kelce wide open for like a 20-plus yard gain. But we haven't seen that a ton unless it's desperation mode, i.e. against the Cincinnati Bengals in the fourth quarter, or, hey, I'm really trying to work on Rashee Rice. The coaching staff is obviously trying to get Xavier Worthy up to speed as much as they can. So, like, in a weird way, Kelsey's gone from, like, the guy to, like, decoy and, like, save him for later.
And honestly, but again, like, if you go back through, I can point out at least three routes against Atlanta.
Yep.
That Travis Kelce takes everyone with him before Rashee Rice makes the catch.
Yep.
Like, at least three. I mean, it might be more than that, but I can think of three off the top of my head where Rashee is standing by himself because of Travis Kelce. And so, like, I don't know. I guess I've never been that Travis Kelce's watch. I certainly don't think
I just can't believe
right
that
they
said he was out of shape. Hey, what is Tom Rashee doing?
Also, like, this is like, I'm not making it about her, but you are. Like,
are we not allowed to say that he's out of shape? Partying all offseason?
Because he's been partying all offseason.
He's been jet-setting around with the most famous person probably in the entire world. The coverage and the respect he gets is the same. The athlete is not.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Not
that's crazy talk.
Nate Taylor from The Athletic joining us in studio. Let's talk about the backfield for a bit. We know you mentioned Pacheco, and it could be, you know, 7-plus weeks or whatever from now before maybe he's available. Kareem Hunt, practice squad, was not active. We'll see. He still technically hadn't been with the team for a week even as of today.
Yeah.
So let's assume whether it's this week or next, Kareem Hunt is available. How do you think this split is going to go? Because Carson Steele got 17 carries, was very effective in the game.
Yep.
Samaje Perine, 6 carries, was fine. we were talking earlier, we think when Kareem Hunt is available, the six, let's just call it six carries for P. Ryan, go to Kareem Hunt. Carson Steele is probably never getting more than 17 carries in a game. And then you mix in P. Ryan if he's still active in some passing game.
Perfectly said. I completely agree. I think there'll be still a running back by committee until proven otherwise. So now you could say...
But that was a heavy committee, 65-35 in favor of Carson.
Yes, and, but that was the plan anyway because Carson's the rookie with the young legs, and this experience will better serve him down the road, even though you might not give him the same workload with Kareem Hunt in the mix. So if everything goes well this week... the expectation is that Kareem Hunt will be in uniform against the Los Angeles Chargers. I don't know if it'll be a 50-50 split in terms of carries, but, like, you know, that'll be the norm. So you could say, hey, Carson Steele will probably still start, but Kareem Hunt will get, you know, I don't know, 7 to 8, maybe 10 touches based on how the game script goes. Splitting that time with Carson Steele, who will be, I think, still the more traditional short yardage option until Kareem Hunt gets even more into the mix, because they're going to give him a limited amount of, you know, personnel grouping, plays, packages of the like. And then, yeah, and then you still have P. Ryan, who could be your third down back, your essentially your sixth offensive lineman if you are trying to get the ball downfield more with Patrick Mahomes. Based on what you hope is an improved play from Wanya Morris, who wasn't terrible against the Falcons, but he was serviceable, and now you hope with more play, with more rhythm, with more time with Joe Tooney, he can actually play better so that you may have more just overall better protection and Patrick won't have to necessarily speed himself up. But yeah, I'm excited to see how Kareem Hunt looks, because they're going to hand him the ball with probably gap scheme type runs. I don't know if they're going to do a lot of zone stretch type work just yet, but yeah, he can obviously catch the ball out of the backfield. You can run a couple screens for him as well. But all the credit to Carson Steele for stabilizing the running attack just well enough to keep the Atlanta Falcons honest, to punish them when they obviously had a lot of deep, you know, defensive backs, 10, 15 yards off the ball. And now you have him go back to a more traditional role for a rookie, with Kareem Hunt being able to be that 1-2 punch again.
For, and this is probably, I guess, quickly, but Justin Reed and Nick Bolton, do you think we could have just chalked up their early season struggles to they didn't have a training camp at all? They were coming off of injuries. Eyes are slow. Bodies are slow. I mean, look, Nick Bolton had his best game of the season.
Yes.
Justin Reed still got burnt by a tight end on one.
Yeah,
but
not
it's
great.
Like, but, you know, will he come back around once, you know, his legs are under him?
I'm not worried about Justin Reed just because from a schematic standpoint, he's a veteran enough to understand what he's going to be asked to do. Again, if the offense is getting away with all these giggle type formation and plays, the defense is kind of getting away with it too. They haven't been super game plan specific yet. I think they've been pretty traditional for the most part, which is why they got burnt on that touchdown. Cause
it was tried to signal switch. Nobody switched.
Yes. It was like, oh, you guys, no one's actually put you guys in the situation yet. I'm not worried about Justin Reed as a ton because I think he'll get better as the season goes along. That's actually traditionally how he's played throughout his career.
The entire Chiefs defense, it's gone with him.
Yes. And so I do think you can chalk it up to not having training camp, most of training camp, obviously not having the preseason. But it is fascinating that the one hole on the Chiefs defense right now, outside of like the occasional dips in consistent pressure, is every tight end that plays against the Chiefs looks like a Pro Bowler.
They did a good job, except for that 150-yard catch from
two catches for 59.
But it still happened.
2 for 59.
Yeah. You know, we went through all this offseason training camp talk about the cornerback 2
position. Bijan Held, you know? Thanks.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just trying to give an excuse.
Perfect. But yeah, I mean, you know, we went through all this talk about, like, man, who's going to be the cornerback 2 without L'Jarius Sneed? And, you know, it's actually not the second wide receiver that has most hurt the Chiefs. It's actually been the tight end.
So, I underestimated Willie Gay's absence, I'll admit.
Yes, yes. Andrew Tranquil has had a little bit of a slip in his coverage production this year compared to what he did last year. He's actually gotten a lot better as a run defender, which I didn't necessarily see coming. But when Rizzi joined the team, you know, Drew Trenk was supposed to be like, hey, covers linebacker. And he has also missed some tackles in the open field as well.
We got Nate Taylor from The Athletic in studio with us. We'll have a couple more minutes with Nate. And then J.J. Piccolo, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, joined us earlier. He talked about the importance of tonight in the next six games. Back here, Cody and Gold on 96.5 The Fan. Nate Taylor from The Athletic, our Chiefs insider, joining us in studio. Coming up in about 6 minutes or so, you'll hear our conversation with the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo. We know the Royals got six games to go. They do currently occupy a playoff spot, but they are in the middle of a seven-game losing streak, so we'll talk to J.J. about tonight's game and the rest of the week ahead. But I did want to ask you, Nate, about left tackle. Last week you were in studio, or at least on the phone with us, we were talking about Kingsley Wanye, who's going to start. Ultimately, we know Wanye got the nod. They didn't really rotate in. No, they brought in Kingsley for like a third and short. They didn't rotate. Yes. No, Wanye
that was such an handy lie.
Wanye Morris was the starting and is the starting left tackle for this football team.
Yep.
We had the question earlier. I don't know if you agree. Do you think, based on how Andy normally operates with, you know, basically taking someone's job from them, that they don't do it as quick as they did with Kingsley if they were not going for a three-peat? Or is left tackle just that important they're not messing around?
I'll be honest. I'm shocked that they made the switch as quickly as they did. So I am led to usually give Andy the benefit of the doubt in this, which would lead my answer to be I don't see them making this move if they weren't going for a three-peat. Now, it's so interesting that because they are going for a three-peat that they put an incentive on acquiring a left tackle in the draft, which is so fascinating. So, like, they were motivated because of the three-peat, because of their excellence, to go get a dynamic receiver and a left tackle. Those were their two biggest objectives during the draft, and they succeeded in doing that in the first two rounds. So you give them a ton of credit for being able to maneuver in order to do that. But normally Andy Reid does not do this. So I don't know if Kingsley's going to get a chance to re-earn his spot or if it's going to require an injury to Wanye Morris for that change to happen again. But I am surprised, and it might be because of what is in front of them that they have made this change, which is out of Andy Reid's normal operating procedure.
Like, can you develop Kingsley Suamataia in season if he's not getting actual reps, though? It's just a wash year, and then we're back to developing in camp next year?
You can develop technique. This is
which is maybe his biggest problem.
Yes. I think you can develop technique and habits and correct those habits that were obviously not polished against Trey Hendrickson and the Cincinnati Bengals. But to your point, you talk to Jeff Schwartz, Mitchell Schwartz, Jeff Allen. They'll all tell you can't get better unless you actually play. There's just no way to simulate it in practice, even in a training camp like setting, because, okay, you might get the occasional one-on-one rep against Chris Jones, but that's not for a 60 snap game, you know, where there's actually, you know, stakes on the line and you're not just going through a normal practice. So you can work on technique, you can polish that, you can build better habits about preparing and training and getting yourself to be in the best possible shape to go against that elite freak of a human being that is a outside pass rusher. But the only way you get better at it, I think, is to play the games. So it's unfortunate that this has happened to Kingsley before the calendar turned to October.
Yeah, that's crazy. Now, does that mean at this point Kingsley, let's say Juwan Taylor had something injury-wise, Kingsley the right tackle? Who else would it be?
Don't say that out loud.
Okay. Or would they move Wanye to right?
Say that out loud.
They move Wanye to right.
Say that out loud, Alex.
They move Wanye to right and Kingsley to left.
Don't say that out loud, because
just saying.
I mean, technically, that job is supposed to be Lucas Niang's, who's on the practice squad.
Okay.
Or Ethan Driscoll, if you want to get real freaky.
Kingsley played right tackle in college, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true, but he has the athleticism of a left tackle, and you wouldn't.
Okay.
This is like the starter in the bullpen conversation every time with left tackles that aren't working. What about right? And then once you get done with right, you're like, probably be a pretty good guard.
I'm only saying if Juwan gets hurt.
Right.
Juwan's fine. He's been playing fine.
He's been playing really well.
Yeah,
a lot better than the start of last year.
Yeah, yeah.
But honestly, if you're looking for the five best guys, which is what every offensive line coach will tell you, Andy Reid will say, we were just looking for the five best guys. If Juwan Taylor were to have some injury, you would move Wanya Morris to right and you'd put Kingsley at left.
Okay.
Mostly because Kingsley has only worked at left tackle, whereas last year they actually started to prepare Wanya Morris midway through the season, based on my understanding, about being available for both. And then, of course, Donovan Smith had the neck injury, and that thrusted him into being a starter for, what, four games?
Yeah,
late in December, before Donovan Smith came back for the postseason run. So, in training camp, if that matters, which I think it does, Wanya Morris was the tackle who was actually practicing at both spots at various occasions, whereas Kingsley was always the left tackle.
Nate, appreciate it, man. Good to have you in studio again. Keeping an eye throughout the week for the work over at The Athletic. Earlier today, we did have the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Piccolo, join us. We started our conversation just asking him, hey, through the eyes of a general manager, what are you seeing during this seven-game skid?
Well, clearly, it's a disappointing week. I mean, it's seven games in a row that we dropped, and, you know, there's nothing we can do about it at this point other than move forward. We've put ourselves in a great spot to finish up the season, and we have a great chance of getting the playoffs. And if we dwell on what happened the last 7 days, then we're not going to be able to pick up and move forward tonight. But I know the guys are in the right frame of mind, and, you know, that's all I'm focused on right now. We can't talk too much about what we didn't do. We need to talk about what we're going to do in the coming week.
When we talk about stuff like this, leadership typically comes up, JJ, because, you know, Q is talking about, look, it's hard not to be a bit down when you're in the middle of that streak. How do you, you know, what's your role in this? Do you leave it to the players? How does everyone handle this stuff? Or do you just try to be like, well, today's a different day. Here's who's on the mound. Take a look at the scouting report. Do you ignore it in some ways? Or do you need people to step up as leaders in this moment?
Yeah, you can't overreact to it. I mean, I lead in a certain way. Q leads in a certain way. The players lead in a certain way. And, you know, the reason why we're in this spot is because how we've led throughout the season. And we know that there's ups and downs throughout the year. You know, so we're not going to change what we're doing. There's no sense of panic. There's a reason why we're in this spot. We're proud that we're in this spot. We just got to play a good baseball game tonight. It's that simple. And if we go changing our philosophies, our methods, that's a sign of panic. And we're certainly not going to do that.
Is that why you get tempted? So I'd be curious, right? I think fans would ask this question. So that would be like the Tigers call up Job, right? They say, you know what? Anything we need the last 6 days to get the win, we got to ensure we get to the postseason. I think some fans had wondered that about like anybody in AAA too. Like, are you willing to let Drew Waters hit for a week, even if they're not postseason eligible, if you think you can win tonight? Do you guys get tempted by that, or does that kind of fall into that trap you're talking about, where making those moves sends a warning flag that like there are bigger problems?
Yeah, I can't think for the Tigers. I know they've used their bullpen quite a bit, and I'm sure that has as much to do with it as anything. But for us, the guys that got us here are here, and that's not to take away from anybody in AAA. We believe in who we have on this roster. We believe they're going to step up, and that's what we've got to do. And if you start making crazy moves last week, you know, there's no guarantee that's going to work either. You know, so you stick with what you know and trust in the players you have. And let's face it, we throughout the week, we were one big hit away from winning a game. You know, that's really what it comes down to. And the outlook looks a little bit different. But we're still, even though tied with Detroit, we're a game up on them because we have the tiebreaker. We're a game up on Minnesota. And that's the positive. We're in the five spot right now. So they're chasing us. We're not chasing them. And that's why we got to keep it real and understand what's in front of us. And it all starts with tonight. That's where it starts with tonight and you move on.
That mentality, do you sense being around the guys on now what is this final road trip of the regular season? Do you sense that is the mentality from guys like Bobby and other leaders on this team that, you know, they are still in a playoff spot? You guys are still in a playoff spot right this second.
Yeah, they've been really good. I mean, of course, they're down after a loss, and you start thinking about what could have been. But that off day yesterday, I think, is very beneficial because you can regroup and reassess and say, okay, what do we need to do? We've got the right people in that clubhouse. And, you know, there's some youth in there, but there's also some veteran presence. And I think this is where it really pays off because they've been through these things. We've got three guys in that clubhouse right now, and Robbie Grossman, Will Smith, and Chris Stratton, that were on the exact same ride last year, but they were coming from behind when they were with Texas. They managed to get in and they ran the playoffs. So you had guys that went through this and experienced it very recently. So that's nothing but a benefit for us and how it's going to affect how our guys come into the clubhouse today and play tonight.
How do you think it sets up? Like we said, I feel like tonight is essentially the start of the playoffs, as I view it, JJ. Like, this is a playoff game. It should have a similar intensity to a playoff game if you are a Royals player. Do you think that that's the right mentality to go into a regular season game this late in the year?
Well, I mean, it goes against what we've been saying all year, just one game at a time. It's about today, but we know there's six games left. And if you win two out of three or sweep a series, you certainly are going to put yourself in a much better spot. So that's one way to look at it. It's two three-game sets that if we win those three-game sets, that you're going to certainly be in a great position come Sunday night. But if you don't, you're not eliminated. So, you know, we don't like scoreboard watching, but obviously, you know, you do that this time of year. We've gotten a lot of help. There's a lot of teams right now not playing great baseball, whether it's Minnesota, whether it's Baltimore, whether it's us. You know, so we've been fortunate that we're still in this spot. But if you want to look at it like it's three-game sets and we got to win them, you know, it's one way to look at it. But again, it goes against what we've said all year long, and that's just to take care of today. And if we get help somewhere else, you know, you may not have to win the series, but we want to win them. You know, we control our destiny. We want to win these series and do what we can. So that's the reality of where we are with six games left. Every one of them counts the same, but now we're getting towards the ultimate, the end of the season. So it is a little bit more glaring.
Harder.
You know, these, yeah, it's, you got to look at it a little bit differently, but we don't want guys to focus on the next 3 days or the next 6 days. They need to be 100% focused on tonight, and that's how you take care of business.
We're talking to general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Piccolo, here on 96.5 The Fan. We know right now for the next six, though, a couple weeks ago we talked to you about just maybe the way the rotation would play out depending on where you were playoff positioning-wise and going into the final series or two of the season. We know Reagans is on the bump tonight. I don't believe you guys have officially announced tomorrow. Lorenzen had that simulated game the other day. Is the thought that that's a spot tomorrow where he could slide in?
Yeah, there's a chance we're going to do that. We got to see. He's going to go through a throwing program today just to make sure he's okay. So there's a chance he may start that game. He's not stretched out to 75, 80 pitches. So we have other guys, though, whether it's Alec Marsh or Daniel Lynch, that are stretched out, and we can cover the seven innings we need to if Michael feels good going through his workouts today.
Talk to me about Daniel Lynch a little bit. I think for a long time it was Daniel Lynch the starter. Even in the minors this year, it was Daniel Lynch the starter. But we talked about it maybe 2 weeks ago, but it's only gone better for Daniel Lynch since then, JJ. What have you seen out of him in the last 2 weeks? Because he's been a massive force for you guys in the bullpen.
He's been outstanding. You know, the biggest thing, you know, from my perspective, he's just on the attack. I mean, he's going after hitters. Whether it's the reliever mentality or not, I don't really know. I can't get into the mind of Daniel Lynch, but I know that the way he's going after hitters, using his fastball, using his off-speed pitches, he's not trying to make pitches. He's trying to just be in the zone, get ahead of hitters, put hitters away when he gets the two strikes. And that's a great recipe for success, and he's done it extremely well over the last several weeks. So it's been a boost. I mean, it really has, with some guys getting hurt. You know, you need guys to step up. Daniel stepped up, and others have stepped up, and that's been a great thing. And that's why we've said all along, you got to have depth in the roster. And fortunately, we've had depth on the pitching side that we can, you know, replace a Will Smith or a Chris Stratton, Lorenzen going down. You know, we've had guys step up and do what they need to do to allow us to be in the spot we're in.
We'd asked about the offense earlier, and I think it's been about 3 weeks since we checked in. How is the healing going for Vinny?
You know what? He's pushing hard. He's had a scan yesterday. I've not gotten the results that'll tell us a little bit more about where he's at in his healing process. We got to keep in mind it's a broken bone, and he's not going to be able to play if that bone's not healing in a fashion that's satisfactory to start swinging. So hopefully that scan was good, and he can take the next step. But he's still a little bit away from being able to really compete at a high level or in a game.
JJ Piccolo, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals. Appreciate it, JJ, and hope to have you on next week. That would mean good things for the Royals and good things for Kansas City.
Well, I look forward to it, and I appreciate everything this whole season. So thank you, and let's talk a couple more times.
There you go. That was JJ Piccolo a little bit earlier on today.
with us here as he is every couple weeks on 96.5 The Fan. And yeah, the hope is if they get in the playoffs, they keep on rolling here a little bit, we'll have JJ on each week throughout the run. But look, I think it is a tough balance, as he acknowledged. Like, their whole thought has been, hey, it's just today, let's focus on today. But also, like, now you're down to six games. So yeah, you kind of have to have the acknowledgement of, yeah, each day is a new day.
This game
but
means
also,
more than game 57 when it was,
it just does
let's
now.
Play the next day. This one is different. It can be played different. It can be played like and spoken about like a postseason game.
And I know everybody's frustrated, and right now it's like it's gotten sad to the point that we're sweating this thing out, to say the least. But there is also in the clubhouse at least some truth of, you haven't lost the playoff spot yet.
you are still
occupying the spot. It sounds so simple because, and it's not, because they've lost seven in a row. But like, if you just win, you're fine. But that's the issue, right? They have not been winning, and the offense has not been there. And we talked about this earlier. I think tonight it is about showing some life from the offense. Yes, a win, but give you reason to believe that the offense is back. I'll take a win anyway, but I'll be honest. Like, even if they won like 1-0, you'd still be like, well, the offense still sucked.
But at least they won.
You need the win. At this point, it doesn't matter how it happens. But to give you some confidence, the Tigers, did you check the score today?
0-0, bottom four.
Okay.
Scooble's given up one hit. The Tigers currently have given up one hit as well.
Just asking.
Is there a reason for that?
Nope. Just asking.
Scooble has four strikeouts through four innings at the moment. He's let up one walk and one hit.
Okay.
The score is currently 0-0.
He's got 224 on the year, right behind Chris Sale. Cole Reagan says 217. Okay. So Reagan's tonight. 12 strikeout night.
I mean, I hope so. Fine by me.
Complete game.
Sure.
Complete game. 13 strikeout night. Royals win 3-0.
Although the Tigers are already threatening. First and third, two outs.
Okay.
Come on. Get an out. Pepio. I don't even know. Is that how that guy's name is pronounced?
Yeah,
P-E-P-I-O-T. Pepio?
Yes, he went to Butler, actually.
Oh, no.
So shout
that's
out
how
to
you
Ryan.
Knew right away. I was like, how did you know right away?
I was like, yes, shout that is Pepio. Ryan. I'm like, how the hell do you know who that is?
Shout out to Ryan. He went to high school with my wife, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Nice guy.
After all this? Pepio, kick some ass
before,
tonight.
So I don't know. He seems like a nice guy, though.
Did your wife think he was cute in high school?
Actually, yes.
Baseball player, you know.
He was throwing like 95 mile an hour gas at Butler. So I don't know how he ended up there, but he did.
Well, I'll say he's got multiple strikeouts in the early part of this game. It just ended for you. He's got six strikeouts in four innings.
Jeez.
Pepio's kicking ass.
That's good news for the Royals.
He used to be on the Dodgers.
Got it. I didn't know anything about this dude. Now I'm rooting for him like he's my son. Come on, Pepio, please.
Reminder, the Royals are in action tonight in the nation's capital. Cole Reagan's on the bump. 4:30, Vern's on deck show. 5:45, first pitch. We're going to hand things off to C-Dot and Rob on the drive. We're back at it tomorrow. And boy, oh boy, I sure hope we are finally talking about a win for the boys in blue. We'll have Vern on the show tomorrow. Also, Ross Tucker right here on 96.5 The Fan.